and welcome to Cangria, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I am Sebastian.
Now, you mentioned just now that you're kind of tired right now, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the weather is stupid.
Oh, it is dark and dreary and just gray.
So, what was it? 3 days ago, it was -2. Then it was -20. Then it was 3. And now that it's 8 and it's raining and everything is turning into... Actually, on my way over here, I walked past several people who were gingerly walking around puddles. And part of me just doesn't understand why you would leave the house on a rainy day wearing footwear that you can't just traipse through puddles on. Because I don't know how many times I've seen it where, like, you know...
You're looking at me, aren't you?
You're walking down... Well, I mean, you were wearing horrible footwear earlier. You're walking down the street and then you see people, like... lining up to go through that narrow patch between the sidewalk and the side where there's no puddle. And then you see people with actual, like, water-resistant boots just, like, splash, 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 yeah. splash, like, tramping through. And everybody looks at them like it's wizard magic.
So I'm kind of excited because... So next week we're doing a pre-record and we're highlighting music because I will be in Winnipeg. In the middle of winter. I am very looking forward to this.
Oh, that's a legendary thing.
That's a brave decision.
Yeah.
Actually, I first moved to Canada in 2004. It was the winter of 2004.
Okay.
We arrived in November or December. And
that was the ice storm, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the locals were looking at each other going, oh, this is bad. And you know you should be worried when the locals
in
are,
Winnipeg.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That was not a good sign. But I'm going to the Canadian Museum of Human Rights, getting a bit of a tour, looking at the Pride collection. So I only know of one object they have in that museum.
Is it a blanket?
No.
Is it a sweater?
Yes.
Oh.
And it is the most vile object that makes me gag every time I think about it.
The thing is, as a concept piece, I'm into it. So long as you don't put it on your body.
So just to clarify, a few years ago, Jeremy Diaz of what was then Jazz Vision had this idea of making a literally gay sweater.
Yeah.
And it was a hand-knit... sweater. It looked like the worst knitted fluffy sweater known to man.
Well, I knit, and I can tell you that the knitting wasn't so bad. It was the yarn. They were using low quality yarn, and because that low quality yarn was hand spun with human hair from a variety of LGBT
humans,
LGBT people,
So it was yarn made out of gay hair of gay people.
Now, there is a tradition in North America. It's called hair shirts, and it is when you do take somebody's hair and you make it into a garment. But it's like a doll-sized garment. You spin somebody's hair, one person's hair, into thread or yarn, and then knit it or crochet it or weave it into a tiny little doll-shaped garment, and then you frame it and put it on the wall, and it's like symbolic of that person.
Mm.
But that's... an object.
You don't then...
That's a memento.
Put it on people's bodies.
No, it's a memento.
Oh, it's just the idea of wearing a whole item of clothing made out of random people's hair. But yeah, so I'm going there. I'm excited to see everything except the sweater. And then shortly after, I'm off to Regina to see the radio station there. We're actually broadcast on that radio station, so some of our listeners... may hear us there. But yeah, so it's CJTR, Regina Community Radio. So for our regular listeners on the show, we are on at 11 a.m. on Friday. So you might be on your lunch break early, or maybe you got the day off and you're listening to us. But I'm coming to Regina. Let me know if you'd like to hang out and meet with myself and show me a bit of the town, as it were. You can reach us at TalkCanQueer on the Book of Faces and Twitter, or info@queer.new. Let's talk about some things that you really shouldn't do. It came to our attention recently that, you know, years ago we did a much older radio show, an episode, where we talked about various types of lubricant.
Yes.
And, you know, this is important because some of them have silicone in them,
mm-hmm.
and the silicone can build up a physical barrier on the mucous membrane. you know, some people will know what that means. I'm not going to go further into it. But, you know, in those scenarios, you want a waterproof lubricant. Mm-hmm. Sorry, water-based lubricant, which will, you know, wash out.
Yeah.
If you're using, you know, certain other objects, then maybe the silicone base. So we did a show where we talked about really the best things to use.
There are not that many instances where you would prefer an oil-based lubricant, but there are circumstances where it really is the best mm-hmm. lubricant available.
Some things cause condoms to deteriorate. So
you, and toys.
And toys. So you need to be careful and wise. But there is one thing which you really shouldn't be using as a lubricant.
There's a list of things you should not be using as a lubricant. But this one in particular made the news because somebody decided, oh, I have run out of hand lotion and dish soap, which actually makes a fine lubricant. So instead, I'm going to go into the bathroom and grab the first thing that looks like it might be slick, which in this case was toothpaste.
It's not the only one. According to some news outlets, this is what the Mirror in the UK is reporting, is now it's a trend.
A trend? Oh!
Yeah, and you know, you don't want this to be a trend. Apparently doctors have warned the public. Let me see what which doctors. So yeah, there's been a couple of posts on
Reddit. I mean, it has... Most toothpastes have microabrasives in there to actually help scrape the plaque off your teeth. So long as it's weaker than your enamel, it's not going to cause any harm to it.
Yeah.
So you've got these microabrasives, and then you've got mild caustic substances because plaque is held on your teeth through acid-based glues. So if you put in something caustic, it'll loosen it up. So now you've got... You're abrading your skin at micro levels, and then you're rubbing in mild caustic substances. Plus, alcohol is a chemical class, and you usually when we think of getting drunk, it's ethyl alcohol. So there's non-ethyl alcohols in there as well to help with sterilizing the bacteria in your mouth. So now you're rubbing alcohol into those open wounds, which have also been made caustic, and people are getting horrible chemical burns from this that last days or weeks. You shouldn't do this.
Don't.
Teeth are literal crystal rocks growing out of your face. And in order to clean your teeth, you need mildly harsh chemical substances designed to scrape off gunk from crystal rocks. The only reason why your gums are fine is because they heal so quickly. It's fine. It doesn't bother them.
But would you then use this... cleaning product, essentially, it's a tooth cleaning product, on one of the most sensitive parts of your body.
I mean, I said in a pinch, you can use dish soap. Any soap is also, he should have just used bar soap and just gotten a bucket of water.
I would not recommend soap. Doctor's advice is buying the actual lubricants designed for the actual job.
Yeah.
And they're not that expensive.
There are a ton of food products you could use. And by that, I'm not getting fancy. I'm just talking about cooking oils.
Stop recommending bizarre solutions.
Hey, people used olive oil for 2,000 years for all sorts of things. It's a very versatile substance. You can also clean hardwood with it.
I mean...
Or you could clean hardwood.
No. Do not be applying toothpaste to anywhere which isn't your tooth.
Nothing with a chemical warning on it.
Yeah. And apparently people have been applying toothpaste to burns.
Ooh.
Because of the cooling. They feel like there's a cooling effect.
I mean, there
of
is,
minty toothpaste.
There is, yeah.
And then they're applying it to actual burns.
Yeah.
And then their whole arm or hand or whatever
is
swelling up. So don't, unless it's a tooth.
Yeah.
Don't put toothpaste on it.
Well, I mean, the same thing with a Tiger Balm and Vicks VapoRub. It feels amazing, but it has very clear warnings. Do not put it on broken skin, because if it gets under your skin or into your blood, it's really harmful. Always read the warnings. It's not just there for legal purposes. It is there to protect you.
Moving on from
that. Or just do a suburban teenager and get a watermelon.
Or a peach.
Or
Call Me By My Name. Yes, those are the recommendations. But I mean, it's important because one of the things mentioned was for ladies who may be using this, there is a very delicate pH balance that goes on in the body.
Yeah.
You know, and anything you use, if it's a peach, if it's olive oil,
yeah,
it's not going to be a toothpaste.
Yes.
But if it's, you know, if it's any of these things, you need to be considerate of the fact that, you know, you may be leaving something there. Is this creating a barrier to the skin or on the skin? Is this going to create a buildup of bacteria? Is this going to change the pH balance of the bacteria and that should be there?
If it gets too acidic, you're at risk for a yeast infection, which is more an annoyance than anything else, but it does last weeks or months, depending on the nature.
Just avoid. So, yeah. Honestly, sometimes we read stories, like people who put glitter in their inappropriate areas, and we're like, why are you doing this?
They put litter? Like
glitter. Not litter.
Oh!
Glitter.
Just shoving empty chocolate bar wrappers into their cavities?
Empty the trash can and just like put any old thing there? No, I'm not. No, glitter.
Yeah.
They've put glitter, not litter, but glitter.
Oh, yeah. That was the little capsules with like filled with like
just don't do
glitter
anything.
And lube, and you're supposed to stick it in you and it's supposed to make everything shiny, but glitter is just made out of tiny pieces of cut up
metal or plastic,
which means it has sharp edges, and
just don't put anything in there that really shouldn't be, including toothpaste.
Well, I mean, if you can't eat it, it's probably a bad idea.
You can eat toothpaste.
You shouldn't though.
Yeah, that's true.
You really shouldn't.
So, moving on. Another man on Reddit. I feel like most of LGBT news now just like sits and watches Reddit. But this is an interesting question. There was a man.
Well, the fun gossip pieces we get off of Reddit often.
Yeah.
The actual news stories, we try to go for things like BBC or something.
Yeah, the actual news we get to later is not from Reddit. No. Just so we clarify that.
No, this is gossip stuff, yeah.
So this Redditor said that he was made aware that there was a catfish impersonating him. So for some of our listeners, a catfish is...
Oh, catfishing, that's complicated. It's when you use somebody else's image and you put it on your dating profile and you talk to somebody else and lie that you are that person. Most catfishers never meet the person. It's really just there for some kind of self-gratification, or maybe they're lonely and they feel that nobody would talk to them if they knew what they really look like. Sometimes it's trolls or pranks. There's a million motivations for it, but basically it's just when you're misrepresenting yourself online, especially when you're not just like accidentally misrepresenting, but you're actively using somebody else's likeness.
So according to Urban Dictionary, it is a fake or stolen online identity created or used for the purposes of beginning a deceptive relationship. So it could be for getting people to sign up to websites that get all of their credit card data.
Mm.
It could be to lure them in for, you know, sexual purposes.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of catfishing that
a
goes on.
A lot of catfishers are just lonely.
Mm-hmm. But it could be for blackmail. You've got to be so careful, careful.
Yeah.
So this guy was made aware that there's a catfish out there. On the app, it was on the account of the catfish, there was links to like a Venmo, which is that US money transferring app. And was like, you know what, it doesn't bother me that this person's using my account, but should I be bothered?
Yeah.
That was really the question posed to the room. And to which a lot of people, and we agree.
Oh, yes.
Yes, you should be bothered.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of interesting insights that I wanted to share with people that I thought was really quite interesting. If you become aware of somebody using your identity, mm-hmm. And it's a fake account, you know, you're not necessarily the victim, but your likeness has been used by a catfish, you can actually use a reverse image search to find out whether or not that same image is also being used to catfish on other websites.
Hmm.
So that's a pretty cool tool. You know, if you manage to find it being used once, it is likely that someone's also using it elsewhere.
Yeah.
And then you can also report those other websites and accounts as being fake and using your likeness.
Hmm.
It's also worth, you know, reaching out to see if there's any legal consequences. Because, you know, if there was a crime and people believe that it's you that's responsible, there could be considerations there.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably going to get off the hook, but that's still months of dealing with police and interviews and courts, and it's
identity theft.
You don't.
It's being the victim of identity theft.
You just don't need that. Yeah.
It's not just your SIN number anymore. That people shouldn't have hold of.
Yeah.
You know, your physical likeness, your fingerprints, and so on and so forth. You know, these are important. So if you ever do find yourself being the catfish, you know, where your likeness is used,
I was years ago. Somebody tried to like pick me up, but what they didn't realize is the picture they stole was somebody that I knew.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, hey, John. And they're like, I'm not John. It's like, well, you stole his picture then, clearly. And yeah, no, that didn't go anywhere. Because there was no mechanism for reporting catfish at that point yet. So yeah, it went nowhere. But it was still, and every so often I'd message him, it'd be like, change your picture. Mm. Like, if you're going to steal somebody's likeness, don't make it a local guy that half the community knows.
Yeah, that's weird. It's an odd decision. But, you know, don't steal anyone's likeness. You know,
yeah.
I think that's so disingenuous.
If you're going to be illegal, at least don't be stupid about it. Don't be a Darwin Award winner.
We're not recommending how people should be getting. We're going to be playing Owen Pallett's Lewis Takes Off His Shirt, ironically. And we'll be back just after this.
Start to bleed.
of Canada's queer media. So I have a pretty serious story to talk about right now. And it is something that... It's just... It's a tough story to discuss. I am referring to Reinhard Sinaga, a 36-year-old, perpetual student. This might strike a bit close to home for you over there. Shots fired much?
I had plans on being a professor. Being a perpetual student was part of the career path.
That's fair.
It just didn't work out, so... But yeah.
So I'm talking about 36-year-old Reinhard Sinaga, who has been dubbed Britain's most prolific rapist.
Mm-hmm. Possibly actually the most prolific rapist in British common law. Like all of the countries that use British common law, he might be one of the confirmed cases. Because if you look at people with reputed or possible, there's a few people more. But if you're looking at confirmed, he might be the number one in all British common law history.
So this man apparently posed as the Good Samaritan. He was his family is from the Philippines. He's from the Philippines. He's a mature student from Indonesia. It is thought by the police in Manchester that he has abused at least 195 men over just 2.5 years, often drugging them. It's and so far of all the cases that have gone to court about this guy, all but four were raped. Mm-hmm. So this man is absolutely unbelievable. It's 136 counts of rape. He recorded all of the incidents on various mobile phones. Mm-hmm. That's how they know.
Yeah.
And the police haven't identified 70 of the victims. Yeah. 70.
Yeah.
It is absolutely astonishing. There's been a media blackout on this as it's worked through the court system. He's currently serving 88 concurrent life sentences with a minimum of 20 years before he can be considered for parole. It is unlikely he's going to see the light of day for a very long time.
Do you think he'll be extradited? Or do you think he's going to do that in England?
No, he'll serve the time in the UK. I don't think Indonesia's going to fight to have him, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, so he was sentenced on Monday. The judge said he was dangerous, deeply disturbed for an individual with no sense of reality. And what's really quite shocking is how this happened.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking, how on earth, in a downtown area, do 135 people, 135 men...
Confirmed. The police are not ruling out the possibility that he has the trophies and recordings of 195 men, but quite often, if you're looking at people who do serial behavior like this, that kind of activity of keeping trophies and recording your what you've done doesn't always start at the beginning. So there might be at least another dozen men before this. This is speculation. This is just based on criminological patterns.
Yeah.
So it could be into the 200s, and it probably is. But yeah, how does this happen? How do you get 200 men and not kick up some kind of a sort of a bugaboo in the cop's ear of there might be something going on downtown. And most of the men had no recollection of anything because they were drugged very early in the process and they were given large amounts of drug as well. And when they came to, anywhere up to 8 hours later, they had absolutely no memory of what had happened.
So it is GHB, which is the drug that's believed to have been used, gamma hydroxybutyric acid. Mm-hmm. It is, the drug disappears entirely from your system within 2 days.
Well, the thing is,
it's liquid, clear, very popular in the gay scene.
They can't confirm that it's GHB because they couldn't find any trace of it in his apartment. The thing is that there's two possible drugs. There's GHB and there's another one. I think it's GLB, which your liver converts into GHB. Mm. The difference being that GLB is a little bit more harmful to your body. Neither of them are particularly lethal so long as you control the dose, but anything that slows down your heart rate can be lethal if it's done too high. But it's just from the recordings, the symptoms of the men while they were passed out, half of them vomited in their sleep. So clearly there's some kind of toxic activity happening in their body, which implies it's probably either an overly high dose of GHB or GLB. None of this particularly matters except to say that it was a string of drug-assisted sexual assaults.
So one of the straight men who reported this in the court case, told the judge, and I quote here, "It looked like water, but there was a solution in it, almost like salt. It wasn't as transparent as water. I think I said to him, 'What's this? This isn't water.' And he said, 'It's water. You need to drink water.' And then he doesn't remember anything until he woke up."
Hmm.
The reason why I wanted to talk about this is, first of all, these were sexual assaults against men.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily a gay man. It was just pretty much any man that could be lured. And it was things like people's phones would die, and he'd offer them a place to recharge their phone. They'd be so blackout drunk, and he's like, you know, look, you won't get home safe. I live just, you know, just up there, crash on my couch.
Yeah.
You know, it could be people stumbling into cabs, and he's helping them home, or people is like, oh, there's an after party at my place. People are on their way over. Just a lot of different ways to dupe people and trick people into coming to his apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely despicable. Apparently, there was a WhatsApp group where he called it his secret poison, which he'd used on all of these men. Which is astonishing. Thank God, 48 of the men gave evidence.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the police haven't been able to identify a lot of the men that were there. He kept souvenirs, passports, watches, video footage of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, all of these souvenirs kind of built up and allowed the police to kind of identify them.
Yeah, the watches, not the watches, the ID, wallets, ID, phones, that's how they found the men that they did. There's a whole bunch of others where all they have is the image of them. And it's not the kind of thing where you put that on the evening news and say, is this you? We're looking for you. You may have been sexually assaulted. You don't want to announce that. They're actually being very sensitive. Now, when I read this story, something that kind of jumped out at me was how sensitively and professionally the police were dealing with this case. Historically, serial rape has not gone well from a detective point of view, where the victims weren't respected very well, or the media treatment of the victims wasn't very respectful. But this, as soon as they discovered that there was a pattern, the case opened and just exploded so quickly. It was taken very seriously. And the victims were treated with sensitivity. And from what I saw, they predicted that about 1 in 5 of the victims were gay, which is a minority, but it's still higher than the community average. So depending on what numbers you're looking at, it's somewhere between 2 and 10% of the population is gay, depending on what you're willing to believe and how you define your terms, blah, blah, blah. So it's at least twice the base amount. So it was disproportionately gay, but still a small portion of the whole. But the fact that the police did take this seriously, I think, is at least this little nugget of shining light in the back of it, that this is a sign that things are being looked at in a way that's very progressive.
So just some of these are just horrific.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't want to go into detail on air too much of some of this stuff. If you're interested in true crime, if you'd like to know the details of the case, I definitely encourage you.
The Guardian has some good coverage of it.
Yeah.
Out of the UK. And honestly, it's tough because I think what this one does is it really demonstrates why personal safety is so important.
Yes.
So important.
Absolutely, yeah.
And having someone that you can trust. One of the victims was 19 and had gone out for the night with his mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a 19-year-old and the mother going for drinks and, you know, celebrating. He has a couple too many. He gets kicked out of the cab. In walks Sinaga.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just scenarios where you wouldn't believe, mm-hmm. you know. If you wake up naked and someone says you vomited all over yourself, that's why you're naked. How realistic is that?
Yeah.
You know, be skeptical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Be aware of your own personal security and check. I am astonished.
You can also, actually, you can report a crime without pressing charges. You can say, I don't know if something happened to me or not, but it happened at this location. And what they do is they put it in a filing cabinet so that if a case does open, they say, oh, look, here's another report, a report with no charges pressed associated with this address. Let's call that person up and maybe they know something. So
you are so right. And I tell you why you're so right. Because the vast majority of his victims mm-hmm. were from the factory nightclub.
Okay.
If all of those men had reported, I woke up naked in a strange man's house yeah. after going to the factory nightclub.
Yeah.
You know, they would probably put a patrol undercover car nearby to keep an eye out.
No, not in the UK. They have CCTV footage.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They have thousands of hours of footage of him. That's the problem.
If there was a pattern, if even some of these men came forward and said, you know, I woke up naked in this strange man's mm-hmm. house.
I don't want to press charges because I don't know. Maybe I did just vomit in the sleep.
But even raising the question.
Yeah, it's very disheartening.
You know, I don't want to instill too much fear here. This was in Manchester. This wasn't the UK. But, you know, we had Bruce MacArthur in Toronto.
Yes.
We've had similar things here in Canada.
And there's another couple stories today as well. Yeah.
Before I get to that, Renega was described as Peter Pan. He's 5'7", small, meek, inoffensive,
yeah.
charming. You could pick him up and throw him 30 yards.
Mm.
You know, there's nothing to the man. But if you're unconscious from a drug,
yeah.
it doesn't matter.
None of that. Predicting somebody, how dangerous somebody is according to their age, size, biological sex, gender, any of that never affected me because in the back of my mind, I know Bruce Lee was like, what, 5'9" and lanky, and he could beat the snot out of any of us any day of the week. That there's, you know, with enough experience and cleverness, you can do all sorts of amazing things. And sometimes amazing, I mean that in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't look down on people. Everyone, I don't want to say everyone's a potential threat, but you need to protect yourself and you cannot dismiss somebody based on your assumptions of them.
So I think you referenced Tyler Buchanan earlier.
Yes.
He's just been sent for 10 years to prison. And I believe it's in the States and Santa Monica. And what he did was he had Craigslist and other personal ads. I think it was mainly Craigslist he used, Backpage maybe, mm-hmm. and essentially offered gay sex services
mm-hmm.
to men, you know, escort services, hookups, yeah. that kind of stuff. And then as soon as it would happen, he would blackmail them and
yeah.
threaten to message, you know, make the messages public, send photos and other information until they would pay $100 up to $4,000. And apparently he had blackmailed over $250,000 before he was caught and arrested. And you know what? This is, we said earlier this was an American story, but when I worked for the Ottawa Police Service mm-hmm. in the job that you now have,
yeah.
there was a serious discussion in the office about the fact, how do we get people to report that, you know, maybe the guy is straight, maybe he has some kids, but
yeah.
he went into a room, you know, to have an intimate moment with just another guy to relieve some stress,
yeah.
let's say. And the guy stole his wallet. Well, what do you do?
Yeah.
Do you report that? If it goes to trial, you know, do you have to give evidence and have to explain to the wife? And, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people don't come forward.
Yeah.
But that same guy could be stealing everybody's wallet.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? And it's a pattern. And the police can't react to things they don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what is at the heart of this. And what was at the heart of the blackmail story that I was witness to in Ottawa. And that does happen in Canada.
The solution to both is still reporting without pressing charges. Because it's on record. If somebody else steps forward, then it turns into a thing. And if nobody else steps forward, if you're willing to say, it's not worth it for me to get entangled in any kind of proceedings, then that's your decision. But still, for the protection of other people, reporting without pressing charges is a way, because they do protect your anonymity. They do protect your identity when you do something like that. Now, obviously, every province and country, because we have a lot of listeners from around the world, definitely double check the legal system where you are. But reporting without pressing charges, I mean, there's certain things you can't do that with. Like if there's potential harm to a child, dependent, senior, someone who's not got proper mental faculties, they are compelled, they have to act. But if it's against yourself and you don't fall into any of those categories, in most jurisdictions, it is possible to do that. And definitely look it up and be aware of what the law is, because when bad things happen, you can help stem that from turning into a serial thing.
I think it's important as well that if you're engaging in, I want to say risky activities, but going to a nightclub and having a fun night out, Should not be risky.
Yeah,
and it's really sad. But I think if you and maybe a few of your friends are going out to a nightclub, or going to the bar, just have a designated driver, even if you're not driving home. You know what I mean? Have somebody with the wits about them to make sure that everyone gets on the bus and gets home. To make sure everyone gets into the cabs and gets home. You know, just having that one sober friend who just keeps an eye out.
Or even just less drunk. I mean, there have been times where I go out with friends and I only have one or two to make sure that I'm sharp enough.
Exactly. And it's if you are one of these guys who maybe want to engage the services of this man and you're going somewhere for a couple of hours, tell somebody, oh, by the way, I'll be going so-and-so. Or have another trick is writing an email that's scheduled to send, unless you stop it from sending.
There are services, I can't remember what they're called, but there are services where you can just tell them where you are, where you don't want your family or friends to know that you're doing this sort of thing. And if you don't check in, or they check in with you, and if you don't respond, then they tell someone. I mean, there are services like that. There are ways of protecting yourself, for sure.
And it's just, it is very unfortunate that we're talking about these extreme cases in the US and the UK.
Yeah.
But I can tell you from experience working in Canada that they happen here.
Yeah.
You know, not to that degree. We haven't seen a serial rapist such as this guy.
Not yet.
But
I mean, a lot of this is driven by modern technology. Like the most prolific case of serial killing was only convicted 5 years ago. It was 93 women across 40 cities. And the kind of technology that you need to make that happen didn't exist until recently. In this case, in the UK, they wouldn't be able to identify those 195 men if he didn't have a recording device in his pocket.
Or kept items and so on and
so forth. So yeah. Technology has changed a lot of this. So for all we know, there is another serial crime happening right now somewhere in Canada. And hopefully, if anybody knows something, they will step forward.
Absolutely. We sincerely hope that you reach out. We do know that it is not easy to talk about this.
Yeah.
Find out if you can make anonymous reports. Just make the authorities aware.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we get these extreme scenarios.
And Crime Stoppers is anonymous.
That's true.
Yeah.
Anyways, this is Caught in the Middle by Trisha Foster, and we'll be back just after this. Thinking there's so much to do in so little time, as I watch my clothes drying out on the line. Days disappear, seasons fly by, and I'm running out. Reaching over for another bite.
piled high. I'm playing catch up and trailing behind, staring up at the sky, wishing for peace of mind. Too far gone to count the sheep. My rested hands don't seem to want to move. My tired feet, oh, they just can't find the groove. I feel as though I've been hit by a big ton of bricks. I keep latching on, slowly losing my grip. As common sense flows through my fingertips, I remind myself that I'm better than this.
To Cangria, home of Canada's queer media. So, great news.
And I'm Sebastian.
Yes. Sorry. Jason Viltry of Thunder Bay Pride Association has announced that they have raised $10,000 to install a rainbow crosswalk in Thunder Bay within just a couple of months. Which is really exciting. We've been keeping an eye on this. I had the absolute pleasure of heading over to Thunder Bay and meeting the incredible folks at CILU. Some of you may be listening to us on LU Radio. And I was just astonished. And one of the things about this particular story is that the community said to the folks at Thunder Bay, you know, City Council, you know what, if what about we meet you halfway? We raise the money to make this crosswalk. Will you make the crosswalk? And they say it's like, you know what? Yeah, if there's no taxpayer dollars going into it, or not as much taxpayer dollars, then this is great.
Thunder Bay has been hit by some hard times recently. So, I mean, I could see them doing a little bit of austerity, but not resisting the idea, saying, you know, if we had the money, we would do it in a heartbeat. We don't have the money. Oh, you have the money. Well, it's one heartbeat later. I guess we're doing it now. I mean, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Could be better, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited.
Does it say what intersection? Just so that the locals know where they can go.
I do know. I know it's in, like, the arts part of downtown. There's, like, a particular intersection that has, like, a lot of arts buildings.
People should set up chairs and go to watch. Recently, actually, unrelated news, but there was somebody who did a Twitch stream, a fundraising Twitch stream, where he and I think he got a record number of 120,000 viewers literally just watched paint dry for charity. Now, of course, when you're watching paint dry, you're really just interacting with the chat. But still, I mean, Thunder Bay could go down and watch paint dry at the Rainbow Crosswalk, make an event out of it, pull out some lawn chairs. Nobody sits in the lawn chairs appropriately.
like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
We haven't talked about that.
Because gay guys can't sit straight.
We can't sit, no.
No, we can't sit straight.
Look at how I'm sitting right now.
That's so true. it is just so exciting. They had over 105 different donors. One of the incredible local contractors, Northwest Lines, is covering a whole third. 28,000 is one of the things that they'll be doing. It's just, it showed that by raising the funds, they were able to clearly demonstrate not only broad community support there in Thunder Bay, but people putting their money where their mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so incredible. Yep. To see that happen. It's just the support is astonishing. City Council unanimously supported a motion to consider it for the next budget. It's just, this is a good news story.
Yes.
It's
not a story about that guy from Wisconsin who went on a grinder date and ended up eating somebody's testicles.
No, had his testicles eaten, died. A man by Kevin Bacon passed as a result of that. We'll post the links to it.
Fortunately, that wasn't a serial case. That was just one weirdo, so it's less newsworthy.
I want to talk about something, and we'll do it quickly because we're running short of time.
Right.
China.
Okay, yes.
Home to a gazillion people.
I thought you were going to say home to a gazillion grains of rice.
It's true.
No, because China is also a kind of flatware. Get it? It's a bad joke. We'll fix it
next. So anyway, China, home to like millions and millions and millions of people. It's a big chunk of the population of humanity.
Yes.
Lives in China.
Yes.
And they've been trying to get gay marriage for a while. The president of Taiwan, who spearheaded the gay marriage legislation, just got reelected.
Mm-hmm.
Thailand, not Taiwan. So that was really exciting for Thailand.
Yeah.
But in China, people are like, gay marriage. And then people are like, no. It's just been a non-subject.
Yeah. It's not really resisted, it's just sort of ignored.
So homosexuality was decriminalized there in, I believe, 97.
Yeah.
But it's you know, you're not going to get thrown in jail. And, you know, unlike Nigeria and Brunei, where they've just arrested people recently for simply just being gay.
Right, yeah.
I think it was 47 in Nigeria, and man under Sharia law was just arrested in Brunei. But in China, they're not really doing that. There are lots of hospitals and camps where there's conversion therapy just rampantly happening.
Yeah.
Which, first of all, doesn't work and is incredibly damaging. But I bring this up because there was a petition signed by about 230,000 people, which in China is like
your neighbors.
a tenth of a tiny percent, because there's just so many people there.
That's just the people who use the same grocery store as you in Guangzhou.
Yeah, exactly. So 230,000 people signed this petition, but the government, the National People's Congress, also had emails, had letters, had people, you know, reaching out.
Yeah.
And what they've done is they've decided to acknowledge
the discussion
that these petitions exist.
Yeah, yeah.
And you might be like, great, they acknowledge the existence of a petition.
Yeah.
Like, big whoop.
Yeah.
Like, you know, protest.gov has like a million or something, you know.
Yep.
But this, in China, this is huge.
Yes.
Because this is really, really huge. My partner's Vietnamese, and he's like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I thought Janice was in the room. It was just incredible.
The traditional solution by the Chinese Communist Party, if they don't like a problem, is to just wish it away. So there was a period back in the, I think it was the late 80s, early 90s, where a bunch of people were dying of starvation in hospitals because there was a food distribution problem. So they redefined what starvation meant. So by that measure, nobody was dying of starvation. So, I mean, this is a party that historically likes to just redefine problems into the waste bin. So just acknowledging that this exists at all is actually a pretty big step forward, because they really soldier on forward, generally speaking. So, I mean, mm-hmm. And not only that, but, like, the U.S. hegemony isn't what it used to be. China is a superpower. And if China is willing to acknowledge this, a lot of the neighboring countries will be influenced by this, either directly or indirectly. So this could be step one to a lot of places in Southeast Asia. Brunei is actually not even that far from China. It's just across
Brunei is under, it's a Muslim state. So, and that differs, I think, from the Buddhist states of China and Vietnam and
Indonesia, I think.
And, yeah, so it's, I think they may swing in one direction. Actually, it was Taiwan. I was incorrect a little earlier. But what essentially happens is, you know, you collect public opinion, according to NBC. They draft a bill. They think about it, talk about it.
Yeah.
They agree to the bill. They share the bill with the public for more opinion. And then it goes to the National Congress to decide on whether or not to enact it. And up until as recently as August, according to NBC, that the National People's Congress have just dismissed it. Like, there's no need for gay marriage. This isn't relevant. This isn't something that needs to happen. And it's just didn't acknowledge it, didn't give it the time of day, you know, swatted it off his desk. And that is what the really significant change is. You know, the fact that they have acknowledged the petition means that they've allowed it to land on their desk. And it is now there as step one. And let's not be wrong here. Most Chinese people who have been quoted and interviewed in Western media are saying, this doesn't mean we're getting married on Tuesday. You know, this could be shot down. This could be,
This is step one of a 15-year process.
But what this means is that the Chinese government is realizing that, you know, equal marriage isn't just this sort of Western imposition, but it is genuinely something that people in their communities want.
Well, one of the internal drives behind this is the sort of inheritance of the one child per family policies, which have led to China being, what, 65% male in the current generation, I think? There's a huge disproportionate amount of men. No, it's like 1.8 men to women or something like that. There's way more than men than women. I do know that. And they do know that same-sex marriage is, I mean, if anything else, it's going to prevent a degree of civil unrest among the men who are willing to, you know, couple up. And it's complicated because this is, I mean, a couple weeks ago when we were on Queers Questions and Cocktails, that came up at one point in time, just this idea of China is still living with the descendants of Maoism. And this is sort of them trying to, you know, clean up the books. And the explosion in Chinese commerce and well-being and affluence over the past while has been them shedding the last remnants of Maoism. And this is part of it as well. Because before the Cultural Revolution, homosexuality wasn't unacceptable in China. So I don't know. I mean, some of this is, to me, is just resetting the clock. I'm very, in case you have noticed, I am mildly critical of China, but I've also done a lot of reading on Chinese history, and it was like it was going so well up until the 1800s.
But I think what's the key takeaway for me here is that it now means that for folks living in China, for the Chinese in China, who are gay, and love the person they're with, there is they can see that they're in a tunnel, and that there may well be light at the end.
You know, every journey begins with one step, and they just took it.
And this is so vital, and it is huge, and it is. We wish them all the best. Now we're playing out with "You Are a Superstar" by Love Inc. And to everyone listening, I think you're a superstar.
It's not "You Are a Superstar." It's just "You're a Superstar." Like Y-E-R. A superstar.
You're a superstar.
It's not spelled that way, but that's how it's pronounced.
Anyways, I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thanks for listening. Reach for the sky and hold your head up high for tonight and every night. You're a superstar. And don't you be afraid. Think of all the friends you made. Like any other night, you've got your name in lights. You're a superstar.
what you wanna be. So don't be someone else when you be the best so easily. If you try, if you need, my baby, you'll succeed.